Some merely sense the proximity of the spirits about them and vaguely feel their impression on them. But they do not see and hear the spirits. Others are able to see the spirits, but not to hear them. Still others see them plainly, hear their words and can tell the different spirits apart by their nature. The many mistakes made by your clairvoyants in their statements are due to the fact that with most of them the faculty is present in a very imperfect state. You will find many references to clairvoyance in both the Old and the New Testament. Of the patriarch Jacob we are told, as Jacob went his way, he encountered angels of God. On seeing them, Jacob said, "This is God's camp." Genesis 32:2-3. During the reign of King David, when the angel of the Lord smote the people of Israel with the pestilence as a punishment, David actually saw the angel. The angel of the Lord had, however, just arrived at the threshing floor of the Jebusite Arauna. When David saw the angel that had caused the dying among the people, he shouted to the Lord in prayer, "Lo, I have sinned and been wicked, but these sheep, what have they done?" 2 Samuel 24:16-17, 106. The prophet Elisha had the gift of clairvoyance. It is related of him in the Book of Kings that he clairvoyantly saw his servant Gehazi follow the cured captain Naaman and extort presents from him for Elisha on false pretexts. When Gehazi had hidden these presents in the house for his own use, and was standing before his master, Elisha asked him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" He answered, "I haven't been anywhere." Then Elisha said to him, "Was I not with you in spirit, when someone turned back to you from his chariot? Is this a time to receive money and garments and to acquire gardens and vineyards, small animals and cattle, manservants and maidservants with it?" 2 Kings 5:25-26. Elisha also foresaw Hazael's destiny by clairvoyance, as is recorded in the same book of the Bible. Elisha stared fixedly into space, horrified, and then burst into tears. When Hazael asked him, "Why does my lord weep?" he answered, "Because I know the disasters you will inflict upon the Israelites. You will set their fortified cities ablaze, killing their young men with the sword, dashing their children to pieces and slitting open the bodies of their pregnant women. The Lord God has let me see you reigning as king over Syria." 2 Kings 8:12-13. It was by clairvoyance also that the great prophets saw the spirits sent to them, as well as the fate in store for humanity, for nations and for individuals. This fate was generally revealed to them by the spirit world in symbols. In addition to the gift of clairvoyance, the prophets were also endowed with clairaudience. You will find an example of this if you will read over again the book of Daniel, especially those passages relating the appearance of the archangel Gabriel. "While I was uttering my prayer, Gabriel, whom I had seen in the first vision, came swiftly towards me in the shape of a man about the hour of the evening offering. He wanted to enlighten me and said, 'Daniel, I have come now to help you reach the proper understanding. When you began to pray, God spoke, and I have come to impart his words to you, for you are a man especially loved by God, so ponder these words and understand the revelation.'" Daniel 9:2123. "On the 24th day of the first month I was on the banks of the Tigris, and as I raised my eyes and looked around, I saw a man standing there dressed in linen, with a belt of fine gold from Ophir around his hips, his body like chrysolite, his face gleaming like lightning, and his eyes burning like torches of fire, his arms and legs glistened like burnished bronze, and when he spoke, his voice sounded like the roar of a crowd. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. The men beside me did not see it, yet such a fright had seized them that they ran and hid, so I was left alone to see the great vision. No strength was left in me, my face was 107. drained of all color, which made me unrecognizable, I became completely powerless. When he began to speak in a loud voice, and I heard the sound of his words, I fell down into a dead faint, my face upon the ground. Then a hand touched me, and set me on my knees and hands, all shaking." Daniel 10:4-10. I have quoted these two passages from the book of Daniel at length, because they are especially instructive for you and because they confirm much of what I have told you so far. In the first place, you have here a most distinct example of clairvoyance and clairaudience. Daniel sees the spirit figure, whereas his companions do not. But since they also were mediumistic, they felt the nearness of the spirit and its mighty odic power, and fled in fright. This supports my statement that some people, while they may not be able to see or to hear the spirits, can feel their presence. Furthermore, these passages of the Bible, like so many others, confirm the fact that spirits have a figure and spiritual limb similar to those of mortals. Finally, Daniel felt a hand that touched him and raised him up. It was the hand of Gabriel, who had materialized it with the aid of Daniel's odic force. For only with a materialized hand could Gabriel raise a human being. The loud speech of the spirit and the materialization of its hand required so much odic force that Daniel sank to the ground, powerless, and had to be strengthened by Gabriel with his own spiritual odic energy. Then the one with the appearance of a man came again and touched me and gave me new strength. Daniel 10:18. From the New Testament, I shall mention only the clairvoyance of the Apostle Paul. Introverts, in the night, Paul suddenly saw a man from Macedonia standing before him, who besought Paul, "Come over into Macedonia, and help us." Acts 16:9. On another night, the Lord stood beside Paul and said, "Take courage. As you have borne witness for me in Jerusalem, so you shall bear witness for me in Rome." Acts 23:11. On a voyage to Italy, Paul said to the crew of the ship, "Men, I foresee that this voyage is going to be attended with danger and serious damage not only to the cargo and the ship, but also to our own lives." Acts 27:10-11. I have already told you that the great events of the future can be foreseen only if they are revealed to the clairvoyant by the spirit world in a picture. That is also confirmed in this case, for when the crew failed to heed Paul's warning and ventured upon the voyage despite it, they encountered a storm which obliged them to throw overboard part of their cargo and also the ship's gear, and had already abandoned all hope of being saved, when Paul 108 stood up among them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not set sail from Crete. We could have spared ourselves this hardship and loss. However, as things are now, I bid you to cheer up. There will be no loss of life, only of the ship. Last night an angel of the Lord I belong to and serve stood before me and said, 'Have no fear, Paul. You shall stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you the lives of all your fellow travelers. So, cheer up, men. I trust in God and believe that it will turn out just as I have been told. However, we are to be stranded on an island.'" Acts 27, 21-26, to the Corinthians Paul writes, "Though absent in body, I am with you in spirit, and I have already passed judgment on this person who has offended so greatly as though I were there with you." I Corinthians 5:3. Similarly he writes to the Colossians, "Though I am far away in body, my spirit is with you, and it is with joy that I see your steadfastness in battle and the solid bastion of your faith." Colossians 2, 5. From these last two passages we see that Paul's spirit could leave his body and be present at events that occurred in distant places. 109. The development of mediums. "For I will pour water on the thirsty land and floods of rain on the dry ground. I will pour my spirit on your people and my blessings on your offspring." Isaiah 44:3. Whatever is intended to serve a particular purpose must first be suitably set out, prepared and adapted, as your machinery and tools are constructed to meet the ends for which they were designed. Mediums are the instruments of the spirit world, and their purpose is to make communication between the spirits and material creation possible. Hence these mediums must be made capable of doing whatever may be necessary for achieving that purpose. This is accomplished by the development of their mediumistic powers. Mediums are primarily sources of energy from which the spirit beings draw the fuel for their work. It is they, the mediums, who furnish the odic force. To make the steps in the development of mediums as understandable as possible for you, I shall again make use of a comparison. to run your automobiles, you use a substance obtained from oil deposits. When tapping these, the first step is to drill deeply enough to obtain a sufficient amount of oil to make its extraction profitable. But the crude oil as it flows from the wells cannot be used as such. It must first be refined and undergo various forms of filtering to make it suitable for the many uses to which it is to be put. In the same way, the spirit world's first concern is to provide for as great an amount of odd as possible from the mediums. This odd is, however, bound to the medium's body, and it must be treated so that it can be easily released, dissolved, and made available to the spirit world in the quantity required. You also speak of solubility, for example, in reference to the components of your artificial fertilizers. You differentiate between total phosphorus, potassium, nitrogen and calcium content and the soluble percentage of these elements. Only the latter portion is of value to you, and only the soluble percentage is paid for. Similarly, only that odd is of value to the spirits which can be made available by reason of its releasability from a terrestrial body. The more soluble a medium's odd, the greater the amount that can be made available. 110. And the more striking and comprehensive the phenomena the spirit beings can produce. In speaking of the odd made available by the development of the mediums and used as fuel by the communicating spirits, I must point out something very important. If a spirit is carrying out a special command of God's, that spirit will have at its disposal more odd than is possessed by all creatures on earth put together. In this case, the spirit stands in a special bond with the source of all oddic force, God Himself, and can draw from this source whatever amount is required for carrying out the divine command. If, for instance, God commands a spirit to impart instruction to mankind, the requisite amount of odd is supplied to that spirit. The spirit will, however, make use of your odd also, for the spirit world employs this precious resource as sparingly as you mortals do your most valuable worldly resources. In this case, you reinforce the odd at the spirit's disposal with your own, and enable the spirit to prolong its communication beyond the time originally planned. It is thus, to make use of an earthly illustration, like adding fresh water to the cooling water of a cooling tower in order to increase the effect and the duration of the operation. If, however, the good spirits are acting, not at God's command but upon their own responsibility, albeit with His sanction, the work they can accomplish depends on the amount of odd available from terrestrial sources, that is to say, from the mediums. The amount of odd that can be liberated differs with each medium. With one, it barely suffices for the simplest tasks of the spirit world; with a second, it permits activity of a much greater scope; while with a third it may be plentiful enough for the most difficult undertakings in this field. Among these is the corporealization of a spirit by means of a condensation of odd so strong that the spirit stands before you in a complete body, differing in no respect from a real human being. It was in such a corporealized state that three of God's messengers appeared to Abraham, that the archangel Raphael accompanied young Tobias, and that Christ stood before his disciples after his resurrection. It is primarily the responsibility of the medium to make his physical odd as easily releasable as possible. This is accomplished by steadfast inner composure, or what you call concentration. Only such individuals can therefore become good mediums who are able to spiritually compose themselves and divert their thoughts from all worldly matters. That is why your most powerful mediums are found among peoples for whom spiritual composure plays a great role as a religious exercise. The greatest number of 111 mediums is found among the people of India because their religion calls for daily spiritual composure from childhood on. They call it spiritual submersion, and many of them attain great perfection in this practice. Since the human spirit employs only its own odd during such periods of spiritual composure, the physical odd is allowed to rest in the meantime. No strain is put upon it, and it can therefore be liberated all the more readily for use by the spirit world. The more often a person devotes himself to such spiritual composure, the easier it is for him to release his quiescent corporeal odic force and to make it available by emission. It is as with a magnet. The first time a magnet is used, Its power is very slight, not enough to attract even the smallest particle of iron, but the more it is used, the stronger it gets, and in the end it becomes capable of holding onto relatively heavy iron objects. It is the same with the odic force. In the early stages of a medium's development it is feeble, but the more often he practices inner composure, the more powerful the odic radiation suitable for spirit communication becomes. The primary goal of the development of mediums is therefore to develop their ability to release as much odd as possible by spiritual concentration. The amount or the strength of this terrestrial odd is of equal importance to all spirits, good or evil. A second task in the development of mediums is the adaptation of the medium's odd to that of the spirit working through him. Accomplishing this is the responsibility of the spirit world. The adaptation of the odd varies greatly, according to whether it is to be used by high or low spirits. A high spirit must purify and refine the medium's odd, to filter it, so to speak, whereas a low spirit can forego this, as its own odd is impure and readily accommodates itself to the unpurified terrestrial odd. With some mediums there is still a third purpose to be achieved by development. If, namely, a medium's entire physical odd is to be used by the spirits in their work, this is possible only provided the medium's spirit is removed from his body. Hence, provision must be made for his spirit to leave his body. This is not easy to accomplish. It requires much effort and time-consuming labor on the part of the spirit world. The medium thereby goes through a process not unlike that of dying. As you know, when a person dies, death also ensues from the separation of the spirit from the body. I have already explained to you the difference between the body of a medium whose spirit has left it and a corpse. You will remember that when the spirit of a deep trance medium leaves his body, it still maintains connection with 112. The body by means of a band of odd, whereas in the case of a corpse, death has been caused by the severance of this band. From what I have said you will have gained a clear idea of the purpose of the development of the mediums. Its goal is the liberation of the greatest possible amount of odd, the purification of the odd for the tasks undertaken by the high spirit world, and, finally, the release of the spirits of deep trance mediums from their bodies. The development of the faculties of clairvoyance and clairaudience likewise requires training. There, too, the spirit is partly released from the clairvoyant's body, and the odd that surrounds his spirit must undergo appropriate purification. The partial separation of the spirit in the case of clairvoyance differs radically, however, from the separation of the spirit of a deep trance medium. It is true that the clairvoyant's spirit leaves the body, but it remains bound to the body with its entire physical odd and all its parts. The odd merely expands, to use an earthly concept, and its expansion allows the partial leaving of the spirit. With a clairvoyant, a separation of the physical odd from the spirit does not take place. With a deep trance medium the entire odd, except for an odic band, is separated from the spirit, which is thereby set free, being enabled to leave the body and to travel for great distances from it, thanks to the high elasticity of that band. When the medium's spirit has left his body, its place is taken by a foreign spirit, which proceeds to deliver its messages. This is not possible with a clairvoyant, for in his case no foreign spirit can enter, as his own spirit is still bound to the whole physical odd of his body and, in consequence, no space is left available for occupation by another spirit. In the case of the clairvoyant, therefore, a very close union is maintained between his own spirit and the odd of his body, and in that of a deep trance medium there is an almost complete liberation of the spirit from the physical odd. With the clairvoyant, it is his own spirit wanting to see and hear. With a deep trance medium, the medium's spirit surrenders its place to another spirit, allowing that spirit to manifest itself through the medium's body by using the physical odd, which has remained behind. There are, however, clairvoyants who are also trance mediums, be it of the partial trance or the deep trance type. You will readily understand that the spirit world has varied and difficult work to perform in developing and preparing the mediums. You can, of course, form no conception of how costly, to use a worldly expression, the development of mediums is for the spirit world, how much spiritual power must be expended, How many precious remedies and other 113 substances are consumed in the process? Spiritual operations, often much larger and are more difficult than those undertaken by your surgeons upon terrestrial human bodies, are necessary. Some mediums have inner defects that must first be cured before their development as a medium can begin. Just as your surgeons have a great variety of instruments and medicines for the operations they perform, so do we, for we have a spiritual counterpart for everything that you possess in material form. Of course, we spirits are never ill and never require operations or treatment. We use our substantial knowledge and resources only on behalf of material creation, to cure men and beasts and to develop mediums for the purpose of communication with the spirit world. We have our specialists in all departments, including the development of mediums. We have our chief physicians and assistants, and most diverse trained help. We have a great assortment of spiritual instruments, anesthetics, tonics and medicines, all of which are used in the development of the mediums. Consequently, a great many spirits are involved in the development of a medium to serve the good. Just as each assistant at an operation conducted by human beings has a specific task, so, while a medium is being developed, each spirit connected with the process has its special work to do. Everything is beautifully organized. Your mediums in development are therefore in good hands, provided that they place themselves at the disposal of the good spirits, that they shun all evil and do everything with God. No one need, therefore, be alarmed at witnessing what goes on during the development of a medium, especially a deep trance medium. Everything follows fixed laws. The good spirits are the best friends you have, and you have nothing whatever to fear from them. The development of mediums is accomplished most speedily at the so-called spiritistic gatherings, seances. On this account and in view of the great importance of such development, I shall go into greater detail as to how these seances should be held. At the same time, I shall give you the reasons for the particulars that must be observed on such occasions. I shall also explain to you the things that happen at these seances in the course of a medium's development. When a group of seekers after God and the truth have decided to unite in an effort to enter into communication with the good spirit world, the first thing to be determined upon is the place at which their meetings are to be regularly held. This place should be chosen so as to ensure that they are not disturbed. You, too, when conducting important worldly affairs, are careful to provide against intrusion. This is all the more essential when you 114 are trying to establish a purely spiritual bond, which would be much more susceptible to disturbing influences than would any worldly undertaking. The best time for such meetings is in the evening after 8 o'clock, when the day's work with its worldly cares and thoughts is over, and people can devote themselves calmly to inner composure. Generally speaking, seances should not be held more often than twice a week. Before the meeting, the room should be thoroughly aired to rid it of all vapor, tobacco smoke and stale air, for the odic force of the participants is greatly reduced by impure air, and the odic radiation so essential to the spirit world is obstructed. To keep the air pure, a large bowl of fresh water should be placed in the room. This absorbs a part of the air which becomes stale in the course of the seance. On the table at which the participants are to be seated, place a few sheets of paper and a soft pencil for each of them. Immediately before the opening of the seance, those present must no longer talk about material matters, but must concentrate their thoughts and dismiss all purely worldly matters from their minds. Remember, it is for a divine service that they have assembled. The seat each participant chooses at the first meeting should be regularly occupied by him thereafter, because the odic radiation, which varies with each individual, must gradually be brought into a certain equilibrium. For this reason, those present should seat themselves alternately according to sex, for the odd of the male is preeminently positive, while that of the female is negative, and offsetting the one with the other is the best way of establishing a balance. However, this alternate seating arrangement is not imperative, it merely facilitates the balancing of the odd for producing an effective odd current. A change in the originally adopted order of seating should be made only if the spirit world gives such an instruction through a trained medium or a medium undergoing development. If there is a musical instrument like a piano or an organ in the assembly room, it is best to begin the meeting with a religious hymn, sung to accompaniment by the instrument. Alternatively, one can play a phonographic record of a hymn or other solemn song. The singing and playing of a beautiful song inspire the hearts of the hearers with harmony and solemnity and turn their thoughts to higher things. Such music is also a good safeguard against the influence of the world of evil spirits, which will. 115. Try to infiltrate the meeting for the purpose of obstructing and disturbing it, since evil is discord and does not feel at home in surroundings in which the harmony of good thoughts and sentiment finds expression in words and song. That was why, as the Bible relates, the evil spirit departed from Saul when David played the harp before him and sang beautiful songs to the Lord. After the singing is over, someone present should speak a simple prayer in his own words. Should he be too shy to deliver the prayer without the aid of notes, he may write it down beforehand and read it loud with due reverence. Everyone who attends these meetings should take his turn at offering a prayer. Following the prayer, someone should read a passage from the Old or the New Testament, and those present should then discuss what has been read. The singing, the prayer, the reading and the discussion should take about half an hour. When the discussion is over, the participants join hands, the light being dimmed as much as possible, each person laying his right hand over the left hand of his neighbor. This is called forming a chain, and it is necessary to unite the odic force of each individual into a closed circuit, just as separate lengths of wire must be connected when one wants to send an electric current effectively through them. It must always be borne in mind that the ability of the spirit world to perform its work at a seance depends on the strength of the odic current, and that the effect of the odd is greatly enhanced by dimming the lights. The formation of the chain also has a highly symbolic significance, for, just as those present join hands and thereby become linked outwardly into one unit, so they should be of one heart and one soul. They should love one another, help one another, forgive each other's faults and banish from their hearts everything that might disturb the internal harmony of the group. It was for the reasons I have cited that also the early Christians used to join hands when they gathered together for worship. They thus sought to signify unity of mind, but primarily they strove to create a powerful odic current in order to enable the good spirit world to deliver its messages. The chain should be maintained for 12 to 15 minutes. During this time, everyone should strive to stay composed, to exclude all worldly thoughts and to think of what is good. To this end, he may engage in introspection, review his own past life, his shortcomings, his behavior toward God and his fellow men, his sins of mission, and the like, make corresponding good resolutions, beg God for forgiveness and the strength to. 116. Avoid evil. He should give thanks to God for all blessings received, praise and exalt him and reverently beseech him to be allowed to communicate with the good spirit world. He may include in his meditation and prayer anything conducive to the spiritual welfare of his soul. When the time allotted to the chain has elapsed, the leader of the assembly disconnects it. Each person now takes up the pencil before him and lays his hand lightly on the sheet of paper at his place. When doing this, he must desire not to write of his own volition, yet keep his hand so relaxed that it will yield to any motion that may be imparted to it by the spirit world. At the first few seances, the available odic force is usually still very weak. The spirits present can therefore not yet produce any effects. The seance participants still have great inhibitions. Everything is still too new to them. They find it difficult to keep their inner composure and are too tensely expectant of what may happen. It is precisely this tension that is the greatest obstacle to the releasing of their odd, as I shall explain presently. The participants are like an unused magnet, which reaches full strength only through repeated use. However, it often happens that the mediumistic development of a participant is much further advanced than he himself realizes. In such instances, it may be that the workings of the spirit world are manifested at the very first seance, and one may feel a pulling at or a stiffening of the hand holding the pencil, which then begins to move. One must not give the slightest resistance to this impulse, but must allow the hand to move. At the first few seances, the spirit world may execute nothing more with the pencil than some lines, arcs, circles or other writing exercises, before a letter, a word, or a sentence is formed.